in July and August.
Oh yes, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, who come here in July and August, don't have a brother or a sister or a son or daughter who come in April or in May or in September or October, whereas the inclusive tour passenger who comes here in high season does have, admittedly, a reduced number, but a number of people who come in the early months and late months of the year. So that although one foregoes enlarged tariff of the second half of July and the first half of August, although one foregoes that and charges a flat rate throughout the whole of the season, one does gain something at the early and late stages.
So was that something that you were able to offer the hoteliers that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get ends of the season?
That was offered to all hoteliers who wanted to participate. There are those people who didn't want to participate after a week of September or a fortnight of September, or they didn't open until halfway through May, or that sort of thing. They were not interested in the really early or really late visitors. Well, of course, that was one had to accommodate their likes and dislikes.
What sort of people were coming on your coaches? What jobs would they be doing? How old would they be?
They were mostly people in, I should think, the 45 to 50 years of age, and they were upper working class, I suppose, is the best way to it's hard to describe them, but generally speaking, they came from upper working class. The men were principally tradesmen, and the women were housewives.
And did you ever deal directly with the visitors and get to sort of meet any interesting characters among them, or have any particular incidents that come to mind for good or bad?
I established a principle of dealing with complaints. For example, a person might have a room or be assigned to a room which he or she didn't find particularly convenient. So I adopted a principle of turning that complaint into a compliment. I engaged, of course, theatre seats at the Palace Company and at the Gaiety Theatre, and I suppose that the casts of the various shows they had owed a certain amount to us Isle of Man, but we paid the going rate for seats at the various performances, and we always had a few spare tickets, and they were used for complaints, for the occasional complaint that we got. We would, for example, give people free tickets to a theatre or free tickets to ride on a coach, something that didn't cost money. And that's the way we used to deal with them. We used to turn complaints into compliments.
And did you ever meet any interesting characters among the hoteliers?
Mainly, I was recording, doing a commentary on coach trips around the island, telling the people about places of interest and famous people who had originated from the Isle of Man. A number of visitors made recordings which they used for their own purposes later on.
Can you tell me what your working day would be like, just to get a feel for the ins and outs of the job? You know, what would it be like as the day went on, starting at 9 a.m. or whenever it was you went in, and who you'd be talking to, what business you'd be transacting?
Well, very mixed, but the day would start any time from 7 o'clock onwards, and involved first of all seeing the fleet of coaches ready, any trucks that were going out to work for the highway board or for the corporation or so on and so forth would go out.
So you'd hire trucks out as well?
Oh yes, I had half a dozen trucks that they used to. They were mainly kept, of course, to keep men in employment during the winter. They certainly never made any money. I can remember we had a contract with Rural Industries, for example. The famous fellow who speaks on Manx Radio used to work for them, David Collister. We used to hire him a 5-ton truck with a working driver for 13 shillings an hour. Well, of course, nobody could make money out of that, out of those sort of rates, but we could keep valuable men, good drivers, in collar during the winter. We could keep them in employment. Anyway, it would be a job to see the trucks go out to work, and then the coaches would be washed and cleaned, and I would periodically go aboard the coach to make sure that the ashtrays were emptied and the windows cleaned before it went out to carry people. A particular bugbear were the big stones in Peaches, because it was a great thing, particularly in the evenings on mystery tours or so on and so forth, for people to buy bags of fruit from the fruiterers on the promenade, plums or apricots or peaches or that sort of thing, and eat them on the coach. And then, of course, they used to stuff the pips and the seeds and the stones into the ashtrays, and they all had to be emptied, of course, every morning. But then, of course, the people went to the airport, the coaches would pick up people and their luggage to take them to the airport, and then bring other people in from the airport, and so on and so forth, until I usually used to come home for breakfast at about 9 o'clock, didn't I? June? Between 8 and 9.
Down on the stand.
At 9:30, I was down on the Hackney stand at the what used to be the cinema, at the Crescent. There until 10:15, when all the coaches had gone away, either on their half-day morning trips or their on their round the island tours. Of course, a number of the coaches used to pick up passengers at hotels and take them directly out on tour. But then, of course, we ran what was also a Hackney business, where we took people, casual people who just came walking along and would want to go on a coach trip. That's what we had to stand for. That would take until 10:30 or thereabouts. Then it was a case of office work. There was correspondence, bills, cash returns from the previous day, general office work, until 2 o'clock, when the coaches went out from the stands for their afternoon trips. Then, of course, at 5 o'clock or thereabouts, the coaches would come home from the afternoon trips and also from the round the island tours, and they would all be cleaned out, ready for the night's work, those people who were going to work at nights. Then, of course, it was a case of down to the stand for 6:30, at 7 o'clock, and at 7:15, that was finished. And then back to the garage for coach cleaning, office work, one thing another, until the coaches came in any time from 10 o'clock at night until midnight if they were out on a private hire, so to speak. There was hardly a moment to spare during the whole day.
So you'd be finishing yourself sometimes as late as midnight?
Oh, sometimes as late as midnight. But it was a rule that I made. It never turned out to be necessary. But however, I felt it was important from a psychological point of view that no man ever would go out on the road, take a coach out on the road, or be engaged in some activity for the company, unless there was a person, an executive person at Summerhill to attend to anything that might go wrong. For example, it was myself or Billy Collister or Neville Michael Garrett, one or another of us would always be on duty any time there was a vehicle out.
Talking about those other people, the executive people, can you give me a rundown of who'd be working for you in the organisation, how many people and what jobs they do?
Yep.
And what sort of, is this again in the mid-60s probably, is it when you were at your peak?
I started off with one employee, that was Billy Collister. A man who'd been employed in the shipyards during the war, and he came from an old Manx farming family. And he was a traffic manager, general manager of the company in its original formation. He started off by being his employment started in February of, 1961, when I bought the business. And the first thing he did was to be off for a fortnight ill. He was taken ill. That was really serious from my point of view. However, that's the way it went on. Then came Michael Garrett, who is, even to this day, still employed by Tours Isle of Man Limited. He was a tower of strength. We attended his wedding and persuaded him to buy his house that he lived in at present, and so on and so forth. Then came a number of we had a man, Charlie Ainsworth, who was well known. He lived in the, a crippled fellow. He lived in the Mackled area.
Hi.
We had Charlie Ainsworth, who lived in the Mackled area. He was a crippled fellow.
He'd be in the office.
No. He was a mechanic, and a very good one too. He learned how to weld and so on and so forth when he was with us. One of the principal employees we had was Jean Taylor. Unfortunately, she's gone now. I can remember her coming to see me when she weighed up the job before she would take it. That was in a time when there was a severe unemployment on the Isle of Man. However, she left her employment with industrial equipment to come and work for us, and she was a very, very efficient secretary indeed. Very efficient indeed. Thereafter, we used to employ various juniors who came along.
So how many people altogether would be in the office?
In the office we had, let me see, one, two, three, four, about five people.
And how many drivers at the height of the season?
30.
And what about mechanics and depot staff?
Well, that's included in the 30 people. Then we had three travel agencies. There was a staff of one, two, three, four, five, six. A staff of six in the travel agencies. And, of course, doing other jobs as well, like meeting and dispatching people on inclusive tour.
And how much of the revenue of the business came from the links with tour companies in England, and how much of it would come from your own activities such as the travel shops and on the spur of the moment tours on the Isle of Man, do you think, in balancing percentages?
I'm not quite sure. Let me see. Of course, the revenue of the company, the greater part of it, came from passengers on coaches. That aspect of the company financed all the other undertakings that were started off before they became self-financing. For example, conferences, cruise ships. The travel agencies never actually paid for themselves, I think. They were always dependent upon subsidies from the coach operations.
Did you have to spend a lot of money on advertising and publicity? What were your main ways of doing that?
No, actually. My way of doing that was to secure a logo, which was the big M, which was made famous by the Mogul series, about thereby hangs a tale. And it was painted, or rather stenciled, transferred onto coaches, a big M, so that wherever anybody went at any time, they were faced with Man in Tourist. Apart from that, I used to produce a brochure of coach tours, which were distributed in hotels and various places. Not very costly at all. That was the only advertising I ever did.
Can you tell me about the Mogul M? What was that?
Oh yes. Well, there's a conference here once. I brought it here, actually. It was a BBC conference, and the people were accommodated at the Golf Links Hotel. And they came out from the hotel to find a coach waiting for one of mine, of course. Find a coach waiting for him with a big M on the side. One of the directors, at least, actually the two or three of them, they gathered in solemn conclave and said the Tours Isle of Man were in breach of a copyright of the BBC, which gave us furiously to think, of course. And they were adamant that we breached this conference, we breached the copyright, and we would be sued for inestimable pounds that we found rather frightening. However, our advocate at that time was Simcox, which is now quite a big firm, but in those days it was Howard Simcox, the blind man, who was a very clever lawyer. He discovered anyway that the BBC had never taken out a copyright, and so we were entitled to use the Big M.
What was the mogul? Was it a popular television program?
Oh, very, 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 very popular indeed, mogul. And the logo was a Big M. Exactly the same. In fact, you see Walton's fans running round now. They've pinched our Big M and turned it upside down and made it into Walton's
so
television.
A drama series or something on television, a police series.
Oh yes, that's it. Of course it all helped. It was all publicity, free publicity at that.
What was your favourite aspect of the job? Can you remember any particular happy moments when, you know, you thought, "Oh, I love doing this"? Elements of it that you particularly enjoyed?
Well, one of the moments I'll never ever forget was a driver I had from Castletown who worked for the toolbox. I think he still does work for the toolbox of Port Erin, Freddie Kelly. I remember we'd brought a conference here. It was a very, very big conference, 3,000 or 4,000 people, delegates, the Townswomen's Guild. And he came back. He used to work his houses at tea time. He came back half past six one evening to say he had a coach load and he was going round the island, which was unheard of, that a coach should go round the island starting at 7 o'clock. Such a thing would not be possible. It was a full day tour. However, he said, and there were two or three other people as well who would also go if it was available. So I said, sure thing, it's going to be available. Another half dozen coaches there, fill them. I forget how much we gave him. However, I put money in his pocket and we finished up with every coach in Douglas was filled to the brim, were careering round the island with these Townswomen's Guild at 7 o'clock at night. So some of them didn't get back till midnight, but the women were all singing, all happy. I can well remember Joe Skillen's coach. He used to survive by what we called in those days trawling along Loch Promenade, picking people up off the pavement, kidding them into taking a trip on his coach. I remember he was the last coach of all, the only one left in Douglas, and I asked him if he would go on a trip round the island with a full complement of passengers at 10 bob a head. And he didn't believe me. He thought I was joking. However, the six people on his coach he turfed off and went along to the Crescent Stand and loaded up with 10 bob a seat.
He was the last in that day, or he was the last of his kind, did you mean?
Oh, he was the last that day.
Yeah. So did you, over the years, see the number of small, independent, one-man coaches decline?
Oh, yes. I have... I've been very, very interested in any legislation to do with public service vehicles on the Isle of Man. I have the sole remaining copy of the first meeting of the traffic commissioners ever held on the island. And of course, they from time to time kept a register of vehicles and owners available for hire as public service vehicles. I think in applications and decisions number 3, there were over 100 coaches in Douglas.
What year would that have been?
That was in 1960.
But you've seen it change a lot over the years.
Gradually, they all went out of business. Oh, indeed. Oh, what a immense difference. I mean, the Isle of Man is not the place it used to be years ago, of course, not by a long chalk. But of all the things, I doubt if I've seen anything change so much as two elements. One is the coach trade, and the other is the steam packet company.
Very interesting, thought-provoking note to close on. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Edmonds.
Very good.
Very kind.